Welcome to the Hirschfeld Century Podcast. I'm Catherine Eastman, the Archives Manager at the Al Hirschfeld Foundation. And with me today, we have a very special guest. We have Kathy Beal, who I first met at MarxFest 2024, the second MarxFest ever. She is one of the organizers of MarxFest, but she is also a multi-hyphenate, as she told me. And so I'm going to pass it off to Kathy herself to introduce herself to you.
Thank you, Catherine. I'm very happy to be here. I'm an astrologer. I'm here in my capacity as an astrologer, but also as a student of the culture, the artistic and theatrical and movie culture of the early to mid 20th century. And I love to look at the astrology charts of people who were figures that loomed large in all of that. And I think we were at the Algonquin for Zeppo Marx's birthday when I mouthed off, which I often do, about, well, I could have read Zeppo's chart. And then it certainly devolved into, well, why don't we look at Al Hirschfeld's chart, which I love to do. And I also love to explain to people that astrology is not woo-woo. It is very scientifically grounded, believe it or not. And I think you will be amazed and amused by the info that I have. I'm also, I'm many other things. I'm a raconteur, a self-amusing personality, a recovering attorney, and an author. So I'll, and an actress. We'll just throw all that in there as well.
She does it all. Has done it all, does it all. Well, thank you for joining us today. So today, Kathy will be reading us Al Hirschfeld's birth chart for his birthday here on June 21st. He was born June 21st, 1903. But I guess we will get to that. So maybe I'll save that for the birth chart. But first, before we do that, Kathy, I think our audience might need a little bit of a primer and context for what we're going to be talking about, how you've arrived at your findings. So can you give us a little summary of what we're going to be hearing today?
Well, we're going to be looking at talking about a number of different astrological influences in his birth chart, in Dolly's chart, and between the two of them that pretty much play out behaviors and characteristics that we saw out in the world, that we saw each of them expressing. And I'm going to give you the astrological foundations for it. And I think it would be good to start with explaining where I am getting all this. Most people have seen an astrology chart. It is a giant pie wheel with 12 pieces in it, and it's got lines delineating what are called houses. So each little pie sector represents an area of life, and the little planetary glyphs in there, the planets represent influences or energies that express themselves from that portion of that person's personality. The fact that a house is empty does not mean things didn't happen there. As people always say that, they'll see that the marriage house is empty and they'll go, oh no, I'll never be married. Well, that's not what that means.
I see.
And then there are there's a number and a little astrological symbol and another number after that. That is actually the address in the zodiac where a planet was at a particular point in time. So you can look at each little pie wedge as a stage set and each planet as a performer or an actor, and each sign as the mannerisms, mode of expression, costume, guise.
The outward appearance.
And the way it actually happened. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. So you can take a theatrical approach.
I love the theatrical analogy. I think our listeners would appreciate that. Well, do go on.
So you usually very often know when someone was born, and the time of birth will determine where the lines fall in the chart, starting with the ninth house position. When we don't have a birth time for someone, as I don't for Al Hirschfeld, I put the sun on that 9 o'clock position because that represents your social face, your personality, your identity, what people see when they first meet you. And this is called a solar chart. And you can get information that is actually really valid, as you're going to see. But let me just put one other piece of info in here. If we did know his birth time, we would have a sign on that ascendant that would give some indication about what people experienced when they met him, when they first saw him, what he looked like. And my guess would be that he had Leo on the ascendant, because Leo is confident and dramatic and often physically manifests as an incredible head of hair. And he had very thick hair.
Herschel always had great hair. Yes.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, great hair, and was warm and gregarious. And that would fit. So that's my guess.
Interesting. So you were saying the birth time informs first impressions. Is that because, like, that's your first impression?
Oh, like, no, what it does, the birth time sets.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
Sets where the first part of the chart, and then you see how things are going to unfold from it.
Right? Got it. I apologize.
Yeah, so you can look at this as a little box that you look out at the rest of the world, and if you go to a party, this is what you're going to see. And the first impression that you make to someone.
I see.
And it can often be very different from what's lurking in there. However, there are a lot of consistencies in Al's personality astrologically, and the brief conversations that we have had about this indicate that he did pretty well live out his chart.
Yes. Well, I think we should just dive in then.
All right. Well, let's start with his sun. Now, June 21st, as a birth date, a lot of people are going to think, oh, that's the solstice. He's going to have a Cancer sun. And he does not. And the reason is, every year the sun changes signs at around then, but some years it's a day before, some years it's a day after. The year he was born, on June 21st, the sun was at the very last degree of the sign of Gemini. And that would mean he was like the ultimate, the most sophisticated expression of Gemini.
Oh, I love this, Kathy. I'm sorry. This is so great.
Well, it makes
so much sense. It's like, this is the penultimate, like, this is the end of that sign. And so this is the ultimate manifestation of that.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
So this would mean he was all about communication, one way or another. Also, this is ruled by Mercury, and Mercury rules the hands. Incredible dexterity would be part of it. And with his drawings, think of, I don't know anybody that could top what he could convey with a single line.
Sure. And I said, I mentioned to you before, he was also an incredible writer. We have many, many of his articles that he wrote for publications and things that weren't, that didn't end up being published at all. But they're all, he has a way with words as well. Not only, you know, in drawing.
And that would fit because, I'm showing you slides while we're doing this, which we'll put up. He had two other placements in the sign of Gemini. Mercury, which rules Gemini, was in the sign. So that would make him like really, really able to communicate very, very deftly. And also Pluto in Gemini, which was a signature. It was a marker for anyone who was born in it. At around that time, wherever Pluto is in the sky kind of delineates generations of people.
Oh,
so to talk a little bit more about the Gemini part of this, not just dexterous, not just a great communicator, but also incredible curiosity, wanting to know many, many, many things. The ability to multitask. It sounds like a Gemini to me to be able to watch a play and draw while you're watching it.
Yes, yes. And David will tell you he would pick up the phone and not stop drawing. You know, that wouldn't interrupt him at all. So
multitasking, juggling, probably a good sense of humor, maybe
He was incredibly funny. And he and his friends, I mean, they were pranksters. He loved a good prank. He had, you know, some of his best friends were humorous. Perlman, Fred Allen, you know, so that definitely fits as well.
Well, Gemini can be very lighthearted, can find the humor in pretty much any situation. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that would fit with that. Mm-hmm. Did he love puzzles? Did he like puzzles by any chance?
Oh, like jigsaw puzzles or any kind of puzzle?
Mental puzzles.
I mean, maybe. I think of Nina's. The Nina's come to mind, yeah, of course. Okay. Hiding Nina's, that's a puzzle. That's a game.
A puzzle.
I mean, that's the ultimate Hirschfeld game, I think. Yeah.
And also there'd be a real quickness to his mind, to his wit, to his ability to move things around.
Yes, very quick wit.
Very quick.
Yes.
Okay. So that's the first big puzzle piece. The second big puzzle piece is his emotional nature, his emotional driver, how he experienced and received love, what it meant to him. And so he had the moon, which is this, in the sign of Taurus, which is a Venus-ruled sign. Mm. To make sense out of this, this would say he loved the arts. Mm. Taurus, a moon in Taurus can be incredibly sensual, can really like food, can be very comfy, wanting creature comforts.
Yeah, I was going to say creature comforts.
Creature comforts. Mm-hmm. And he was known for, how did he dress?
Oh, he always dressed, well, when he worked, he'd worked in a jumpsuit because that was convenient and comfortable. And his big thing was he worked in a barber chair, which he called the most comfortable chair in America. You could go up or down. You could swivel when you needed to take a nap, turn into a chaise lounge. So he was all about comfort. Now, when he went out, of course, he always looked very nice. Mm-hmm. Any photograph of Hirschfeld out and about, he is looking fine. But, you know, just hanging out, and especially when he worked, you know, which was all day, every day, very comfy.
This moon in Taurus speaks to both of those extremes, or all, everything that we've mentioned so far about his relationship with the arts, because he probably liked the visual stimulation of the arts. This could also indicate an interest in music.
He loved music, loved hot jazz.
And the way things looked, comfort, but the physicality of life. So this is someone who wanted to consume life, not just have an intellectual relationship with it.
I think that's a great way of putting it. He wanted to connect with people as well.
So if in a solar chart, if you arrange everything with the sun in the first position, the first house position, this would put his moon in the house of groups, group associations, liking to do things with other people, enjoying group arts, not being a solitary person. Mm-hmm. And this would also indicate like liking to enjoy the finer things in life with other people, hence the dressing up.
And he was a big party person. He loved to host dinners, loved to host parties. They always had a very famous, fabulous New Year's Eve party that always had, you know, all the top billed Broadway stars and first nighters. He loved to interact with people and be a part of things, not just sit back. He liked to enjoy himself. He was a Broadway first nighter, you know, with everybody else, all the other Broadway first nighters. And I think that speaks to that a lot.
And there's another part of his chart that pulls that in, and that's the planet Venus. Venus shows your relationship style. It's also what you value, and in a man's chart, it can indicate his inner woman or what he sees as an ideal woman. So he has Venus in the sign of Leo, the performer, the star. Venus and Leo would value the arts, would have a flair, a generosity, a showmanship, and would like to be around people who were high energy and performers. So this is another way of saying what you have just said.
And all three of his marriages were to actresses.
And that
so
would fit.
So that fits. Flo Allen, I believe she was in Earl Carroll's Vanities. Is that correct? But please don't quote me. She was a showgirl in that. Now, he married her because everyone told him not to marry her. They were not actually a good match. Then, of course, he marries Dolly Haas, 1942, I believe. She was an actress, a German expat who came here. Was a big movie star back home. And then, of course, his third marriage after Dolly passed to Louise Kurz, who was an actress as well and heavily involved in theater history, really. She's really a theater historian.
That fits. So when I look at the Moon in Taurus and Venus in Leo together, they are in a relationship that amplifies each other. They're kind of pushing each other. And I would say that he did not have trouble asking to be paid, that he didn't have trouble valuing his services and or his own worth or his own work or his himself. Yeah. So, and this would also be like a magnet for, well, just pay me, and not being apologetic about it.
Yeah. No, he valued himself and valued his work for sure. I'd also be remiss not to mention his longtime girlfriend, Paula Lawrence, who, of course, was also a great stage actress herself.
It all fits. That's what that would be. What
I just feel like I should give Paula Lawrence a shout out because they did date for a long time in the 30s.
He was able to coexist with people who were really, really powerful in one way or another. He could deal with people who were really wealthy easily and not cower from any of it. And his connection to the arts, you could actually say, is fated, because his Venus is in contact with the north node of the moon, which is your path. His north node, his life path, his destiny had to do with the arts. And it had to do with working out of the home or building a home in the arts and building a place in the world that connected all kinds of people together. Mm. So he had north node in Libra, which is a Venus-ruled sign. And he has the moon in a Venus-ruled sign. And they were in an adjustment aspect to each other, which is a technical way of saying that, well, it probably was fated for him to move and to change where he was rooted into New York, which happened when he was really young, right? Like 14, 13?
I guess we should have said this at the beginning. He was born in St. Louis, Missouri, and they moved to New York City when he was about 12 or 13. I don't know exactly.
And that shows up in his solar chart that there was an adjustment in his base and where he felt good and secure to actually the place where he was basically fated to be. I mean, you can make an astrological argument that, yes, he was fated to be in New York and to form all the associations that he did in this city and in this greater artistic community, which then gradually became the world. Now, that Venus and Moon are also in signs that indicate incredible loyalty and staying power, like starting something, having it go on for a long period of time. And there is another indicator of that in the chart. I've told you if a chart says something once, it says it four or five times. So this is another indicator of in something for the long haul. Mm-hmm. Saturn in his chart, which is how you use your, how you're responsible, how where you are adult, how you take care of yourself. Saturn's in the sign of the masses, Aquarius, and it's in a direct link with his communication planet, which is in the Mercury, which is in the sign of Gemini, multiple ways of communicating. So this would have meant that even though he did this, did that, did this, did that, there was staying power to all of it, and he could have a connection that lasted for decades, which is, in fact, what happened with the New York Times.
That's what I was going to say. You could say maybe you could say it was his 75-year relationship with the New York Times. I don't know. Yes, and he was like that a lot. I also think he did lots of drawings for this outdoor magazine called Outdoor Life. Totally not Hirschfeld. It's like a hunting and camping magazine. But he did illustrations for it for 12 years because it worked and people liked it. And he didn't mind that it was not theater or the arts. For him, he got to draw. So, you know, sticking with something even, you know, he made it work a lot of the time.
Even if he stayed inside in theaters or in his barber chair, that moon in Taurus to me suggested that he did have an appreciation for things that were natural. So I'm suspecting it probably was not a horrible stretch for him to do drawings for an outdoors magazine.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, interesting.
Did he keep flowers around?
I know they did have a garden. I think there's a funny quote of Hirschfeld's. It's something like, what was it? The only work I ever did in my life was in my garden. So I don't think, you know, he was great at it, but I certainly think he appreciated the outdoors and the beauty of it all. In Bali, Hirschfeld has this decisive moment in 1932 where he visits the island of Bali and the sunlight washes out all the color and all he sees are black and white line drawings walking around. So, and after that, that's when he really, because he was a watercolor artist before and he wanted to be a sculptor originally. But when he's in Bali and he sees the black and white line drawings, that's when he really commits himself to image and pure line. And he really doesn't do any landscape work after Bali. So he does have this kind of decisive moment in, you know, this lush, beautiful, you know, untouched island in 1932. So, yeah.
Well, what you've just brought up reminds me of a point in his chart, a pair of influences in his chart that are a generational marker. In other words, anybody who was born around the time that he was had these in roughly these locations. And they're the two, what I call cosmic change agents. One of them is Pluto, which I mentioned earlier is a generational planet, Pluto and Gemini. People born around 1890 into the early 1900s had this.
I see.
The Marx Brothers all had it.
Oh, fine.
And there was something about breaking from the thinking of the earlier ways of communicating. And I think radio was starting to get much more prominence. It was changing communication methods.
Yes, absolutely.
But it was in a very tight and challenging relationship with the other cosmic change agent in the sky, which is the planet Uranus, which brings epiphanies and just makes sudden breaks. It's very progressive and renegade kind of. And so this would, for one thing, this would be, you tell me not to do it, I'm going to do it. In his chart. But also it was in, Uranus was in the sign of Sagittarius, which has to do with foreign places and also philosophies. And this particular pairing to me indicated breaking away from previous ways of thinking and being willing to go explore new places, whether it was new ideas, new ways of thinking. People with this in their chart, a lot of them ended up being sent to Europe to fight in World War I, seeing countries they'd never been in. Hirschfeld experienced it by traveling abroad a lot, and he went to places that a lot of his peers, age peers, had never been to. You mentioned Bali. Where else did he?
Yeah, so Bali was in 32, and then in 1947, I think, he did the Around the World trip with S.J. Perlman. That's in the book Westward Ha, or Around the World in 80 Clichés. Perlman wrote the text, and Hirschfeld illustrated the text. And it's actually funny because Perlman, you know, great humorist he is, wrote what he remembered or what he, you know, his version of it. But oftentimes the drawings contradict some of what Perlman wrote. So Hirschfeld drew what he saw. Perlman, you know, kind of wrote what he felt or, you know, what he remembered from it. And you can hear all about Westward Ha in episode 49 of the Hirschfeld Century podcast. But Hirschfeld did love to travel and he would go to Europe frequently. He was a big traveler. Now he couldn't fly. He had something with his inner ear. A doctor told him not to fly. So he would always go by train or by ship. And that's actually part of the fun of Westward Ha as well. Perlman would fly to the next location, but Hirschfeld would, you know, take a train or a ship. And so by the time Hirschfeld got to that location, Perlman was already done and ready to go on to the next place. He had already, you know, he'd already done all the stuff he needed to do there. So they're a funny pair, funny pair together.
One thing I'm hearing in what you're saying is a playing out of another potential of this Uranus-Pluto opposition, which is the ability to remake or regenerate yourself. And it sounds like he didn't simply go and be entertained in a new place, but he would be transformed.
Oh, I think definitely. Yeah, he was very, he one of his biggest influence was the Japanese woodcut artists as well. So he was very open to being informed. He's always open to new ideas and being influenced in different ways, for sure. Love to travel.
That fits it. Fits
honeymooned her. In Russia. Honeymooned in the Soviet Union. With Flo Allen, his first wife. They honeymooned in Moscow. And he interviewed all the heads of Russian theater and film. He wrote a great book about it. And unfortunately, it was all lost before it was published. So there are only a few drawings remaining of the Russia trip. But they are exquisite drawings.
Well, how fascinating. Well, his first marriage would have been characterized by adventure in foreign travel, so that makes sense. The second one would have been more, I'm gonna say, radical break from the way things had been for him. Don't know what that means. Unusual. There was something unusual about his second marriage.
I just think they were very in love. I mean, that was the love of his life was Dolly Haas, for sure. Maybe in that way.
And then she wasn't from his background because she was from Europe.
She was from Germany, yeah, yeah.
And then the third might have been a more forceful personality. More of an entrepreneur.
She's an independent woman.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Louise is a strong, independent woman, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to talk about Dolly. Dolly Haas, born on April 29th, 1910 in Hamburg, Germany. And again, I don't have a time of birth, so I have made a solar chart for her, putting her sun on in the spot that would be the rising sign. And she was a Taurus. You might have heard that word a minute ago. She was very salt of the earth, very stable. This would be a love of the arts, of being fed by the arts. She was also salt of the earth is shown by her moon sign. Since we don't have a time of birth, it might have been in Sagittarius or it might have been in Capricorn. If it's Capricorn, which is actually where the moon was for most of that day, there would be more salt of the earth, hardworking, paying attention to details, making plans, making things go through, being very stable. Both of these would be very, very stable. If her moon was, in fact, in Sagittarius, it would be more of a quester, an adventurer. And I'm not particularly hearing that about her.
I don't think of that when I think of Dolly Haas, no.
There are many things that do indicate her association with the arts because her Venus was in the sign of absolute artistry. Venus being her artistic personality, her relationship mode, and also what she valued. Venus in Pisces is said to be in its highest expression. Some smart talking astrologers will say you want someone with Venus and Pisces to fall in love with you because they're very forgiving. They see things through the best possible, best possible lens. So this would have brought a softness to all of the salt of the earth and also possibly an ethereal nature, attitude. Did she come across as almost like otherworldly?
Of course, I'd never met Dolly Haas, but when you said that, that strikes me as a great description of Dolly Haas based on what I know about her, what people have said about her and described her as. Ethereal, I think, is a good word because I think she was just kind of almost indescribable, just a presence, you know, a very beautiful, angelic presence.
With magnetic depths, with some other things in her chart that were pushing on that Venus. So she probably, as a performer, she might have been very charismatic. She might have been the person you couldn't take your eyes off and not quite
know
why.
Oh, I'm sure of that. I feel confident of that, yes.
And probably a very empathetic person as well. Very powerful personality, quiet. Quiet power. Something I would not want to mess with personally.
Sam Rafelson wrote Shop Around the Corner for Dolly Haas. But unfortunately, she could not star in it because her her agent at the time was Myron Selznick. And at that time, and he was a producer for a shop around the corner. And at that time, you know, if you couldn't have a star of your agency in a film you were producing. But I think that speaks to the magnetism of her. And yes, she did have a presence, I think. You know, Lute Song was one of her big stage productions as well. People remember that production of Lute Song is, you know, from the time, maybe not now. But I think she did have a otherworldly presence. And you are drawn to her, for sure. She's a beautiful woman, also.
But there's an undercurrent, like a magnet. And that is really apparent in her interactions with Al. I am not at all surprised that they got married. Because there are five really, really big connections between them. And probably a whole lot more if I were to actually... spent a lot of time looking at this, but her son, her basic personality, was on Al's moon, which means she was an outer expression of what he was like on the inside. So there was a natural comfort and unspoken, this is a safe place vibe between them. And they probably shared a lot that was very grounding, which it wasn't necessarily boring. And they probably had very similar experiences of the arts. That was a common piece between them. But there was that magnetism that she naturally had worked exactly on him. Because I had mentioned that Pluto in Gemini was a generational influence.
Right. And does she have that as well?
Yes, but a later expression of it. And it's on his son, and her Mars, which is her way of putting herself forward, the way she made things happen, and her concept of, on the inside, what a man should be.
Yeah, I was gonna
both say. Of those were exactly on his son, meaning that he was the embodiment of what was going on inside of her.
And masculine side.
And that was a compulsive if you meet, there's no way you're getting away from each other kind of tractor beam level.
Wow.
Magnetic attraction.
Interesting. Interesting. That's fascinating.
And they probably really enjoyed talking to each other a lot. I mean, this is, you know, I want to make love to your mind kind of energy.
Fine. Yeah.
Yeah. So maybe she played with words. I don't know. But there was something that both inspired him and spurred him on. And another thing with the inspiration has to do with that beautiful Venus in Pisces placement she had. I mentioned that if you want someone to be in love with you who has that, this is someone who is in love with love and who's very, very compassionate, very caring. And it was on the planet in his chart that is the most amplifying influence. It was on his Jupiter. So each of them fed the other, and he probably could not get enough of whatever she felt like doing. And she was probably very, very kind and compassionate and forgiving and understanding of whatever he was up to. And very likely acted in a sense as a muse, as an inspiration. He probably came up with all kinds of things he would do just from interacting with her.
I know she always she would always come up to his drawing table and comment, this looks wrong or this doesn't look like, I think it was at the Gary Moore story. He was drawing Gary Moore one time and she came up and she was like, oh, that's a nice drawing of Buster Keaton. And so he knew he had to change something. It's not a drawing of Buster Keaton. It's something like that. I think she was a collaborator. You know, she would, you know, I don't even know if she would overtly make suggestions, but he definitely valued her input. And I think they, you know, in that way, they were collaborative.
And they probably had a really easy flow interpersonally with this as well. I mean, I have experienced this with someone, with someone's Jupiter on my Venus, also both in Pisces, and the stuff that we dreamed up was mind-boggling. It just went away off into areas that most people don't. It was a really, really strong flow, I guess, is my point. One other thing that is Well, two other things that are really important here. They had mutual Jupiter contacts. So let me, Jupiter is planet of expansion. It's an easy Santa Claus-like influence. And she had something on his Jupiter. His Jupiter was on something in her chart. So that was actually really, really beautiful. And her Jupiter is on his Mars, which is his drive, how he did things. And he probably was really, really motivated to make a home with her, because this fell in the part of his chart that dealt with home and family. And I bet that they negotiated things, that they worked things out, that this was not a situation, just my hunch, of one person laying down the law and the other one going, yes, dear. That it was a collaboration in what they created.
Absolutely. And, you know, they bought the house on East 95th Street, I want to say 1952, but again, don't quote me on any year, but in the 50s sometime. And that was their forever home. They never left for, you know, 50 years.
The other thing I want to mention is the unlocking that she did of whatever core issues he had about his family or his upbringing or his place in the world. There is a spot in the chart called Chiron, which represents the wound that you have, no matter how much therapy you're in, just comes back and back and back. And around the age of 50, you hit a point of making peace with it. Fun fact, the King's Speech was about an event that occurred when that character hit the age where this is, you're making peace with an issue. And the actor who played the king was in his Chiron return during it. So that gives you an idea. So there are ways you can work things out. So his Chiron was in Capricorn, which may have to do with his maybe feeling like he had to always work, always make money, being highly, highly attuned to the physical reality of things and being responsible. I don't know when he started pulling money in for his family.
So that makes me think of the Selznick distributing corporation ordeal. It was a big, you know, one of the biggest, it wasn't the biggest film studio in the 20s, but it had the biggest advertising budget. He was hired by David Selznick's father to be the art director. I think he was, what was he, 19 years old, 18? And he was responsible for a whole stable of artists. And it was big payday. And they were just churning out artwork. Well, one week he got 75% of his paycheck and the other 25 in an IOU. He didn't know what that was. And then the next week it was 50% IOUs. And soon enough, Selznick went under. And he was left holding the bag for all of these artists. And he could have just walked away. He could have just not paid those artists and, you know, washed his hands clean of it and gone on and done artwork for another studio. But he didn't. He worked and made sure all of those artists were paid. And that's when he kind of learned he didn't want to be responsible for other people's, you know, their well-being. He didn't want that responsibility. But he made sure that all those debts were paid. And when he did do that, that's when his uncle gave him, I think it was like $500 or something, to travel to Europe. And that's how he gets to Paris for the first time. But that's what makes me think of that event. And that was, you know, he was 18 at the, you know, maybe he was 20 by that point when it went under. But that's an early kind of, not traumatic event, but something that would definitely shape you and change you. And he had hard, you know, he had a very hard line about it. Like, no, I'm responsible for these people. They need to be paid. So we will work to make sure they're paid.
And I am willing to bet that he had responsibilities ahead of his age.
I think so.
Throughout his young life. And, and that's this. So,
and his brother died in the influenza. He died of that. One of his brothers lost a brother, you know, young.
Well, she was like a lightning bolt on that wound. There was something about her that absolutely unlocked him from, I don't know if maybe he relaxed into things more mm-hmm. when she came into his life, but there was something that just broke him free from a long-standing issue.
Interesting.
If I put their two charts together and make one chart out of it, you can see that a lot is jammed up really, really close together. So there was
Is that meaningful?
There's an intensity to what they were as a couple. And
it was very much communicating, social, daring, doing new things, but also connected to the arts. Very, very, very connected to the arts and enjoying the comforts of life.
So there was not just not making money for the sake of making money, but
making money for the sake of enjoying life.
Yeah, that's for enjoying
life. That's the dream.
Yeah, for the sake of enjoying life.
And both of them had, they had staying power as a couple and lasting, affection doesn't seem to be enough of a word, but they had a really good unspoken understanding in addition to what they could actually speak to each other about.
Yeah, I think you could call them soulmates. I mean, they're like a perfect example of just these two people were supposed to be together. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it does transcend. Yeah, just they loved each other very much. Yeah, absolutely.
Right. And that jumps out. It jumps out from the charts. And very, again, even in their composite chart, very, very magnetic. I would think other people being around them would have been enlivened by their combined presence.
Yeah. I think, again, I think of the parties. People love to go to dinner at the Hirschfeld's house. And it was always, you didn't know who was going to be there, you know?
And if you're interested in like what his friendships might have been like, first off, I would imagine most of them were with men because the sign Aries, which is ruled by Mars, the man planet, is on the doorway to his house of friendships. But he also has his moon in Taurus, staying power, the arts, there. This, to me, says several things. First off, mostly men. Secondly, active friendships, like going off and doing things with male friends, as he did with Perelman.
Absolutely.
Long staying power for them because of Taurus being in that house. And good luck getting Taurus to move. All my Taurus friends will not be mad at me for having said that. But once they get someplace, they tend to like to stay there. And and an arts connection. So his house of friendships, to me, says male friends on adventures, going off and trying new things, being active, and him doing it in a comfy way.
That literally sounds just like Hirschfeld. Going off with male friends on big adventures in comfortable style. Yes.
Yeah. And there being an arts connection and being associated with arts groups that were also very, very active. So I would see him, I mean, Broadway is ever changing. It's not like you're part of a repertory company that's putting all of Shakespeare's plays through again and again.
But I think of the Broadway First Nighters. I mean, those people saw shows together every week of the year, you know, and sometimes multiple days a week. And they were all close friends. Brooks Atkinson, who was a theater critic for the Times, he was great friends with Brooks Atkinson. He was a Broadway First Nighter. We talked about Perelman as well as Fred Allen. I think of Alexander King as well. He was great friends with Alexander King. The doing things in a group with friends makes total sense.
Involving the arts.
Involving the arts, yes. Just a bonus, yeah.
But there being a newness to it. So the First Nighters fits.
Totally fits. Seeing again, what the new show is.
Yeah, again, this is not going to a repertory theater and watching the Scottish play for the 15th time. No.
Wow, that's fascinating. Well, thank you so much, Kathy, for reading Al Hirschfeld, not only Al Hirschfeld's birth chart, but also Dolly Haas's birth chart. We don't get to talk about Dolly. I mean, she makes an appearance in many, many episodes, but we don't usually get to talk about her a lot. And she's she was the love of his life. So I'm glad we got to include her in this as well. But very fascinating. I loved, again, hearing everything you're seeing in the charts and thinking this does relate to Hirschfeld. I mean, so much of it is just spot on. So great work. You have an amazing mind and a brilliant talent. And tell people where they can listen if they like what they hear. If you're like, I didn't even know I would even like listening to hearing about Al Hirschfeld's birth chart, but I want to hear more. Tell them where they can find you, where they can hear you talk.
My website is empowermentunlimited.net, like safety net. And I have forecasts using a lot of pop culture references in real language for every week, every new and full moon, and every month. At my website, there is a tab that says Astro Insight. And if you click it, it has a drop-down menu, and one of the items is articles. And if you go to articles, on the right column, it says culture. And I write about a lot of people, artistic people, particularly when something comes up, like a new docudrama or a new series about them. I have things about Gwen Verdon and Bob Fosse, and about Dean Martin, the
King
of Pool.
You just got different episodes here of what we just did.
Right.
Oh, that's so fun.
Doctor Who, Star Trek, you name it, the monkeys, they're all there.
Oh, fun.
So, and also, if you're a Better Call Saul fan, yeah.
Oh, boy.
A long thing about that one. So, that is there. I have a YouTube channel called Professional Aquarian, and there's all kinds of stuff there as well.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Well, thank you so much, Kathy. Again, we were happy to have you. You can find our podcast, the Hirschfeld Century Podcast, on Apple, Spotify, Google, all the things of the Hirschfeld Century. We also now have a visual companion to the episode on YouTube, the Al Hirschfeld Foundation. And for this episode in particular, it'll look a little different from our regular episodes because Kathy is we're going to have the actual birth charts up as she's talking about them. So that will be really nice. We'll have to throw in a few drawings in there as well. So definitely check out the YouTube link. Doug does a great job of our visual companion, which is very helpful for this podcast. We're on Facebook, the Al Hirschfeld Foundation, Instagram and Twitter/X at Al Hirschfeld. And we have a Blue Sky account, Al Hirschfeld. And if you have any questions or you'd like to write in, or if you're an astrologer as well and you'd like to write in and see what you see, or you have a question or an idea for an upcoming episode, info@alhirschfeldfoundation.org will send you right to our inbox and we read all of them. So please send us your suggestions, questions, or comments. And other than that, we will see you later.